here with this week's hottest stories in the investment world. This is Zach's Friday Finish Line.
Hello, and welcome back to Zach's Friday Finish Line. I am Ryan McQueenie, an associate stock strategist here at Zach's, joined, as always, by one of our editors, Maddie Johnson.
Hello, today is Friday, December 14th, and we are here to recap this week's biggest stories from the investment and financial world. It was certainly a strange week for U.S. investors, to say the least, as morning rallies were met with afternoon sell-offs, and vice versa, as the bulls and bears continued to duke it out for control of the market's direction.
This jousting here in the domestic markets came alongside continued Brexit drama and a vote of confidence in UK Prime Minister Theresa May on Wednesday, I believe that took place. And then on Thursday, we had the European Central Bank's official end to its quantitative easing policy, the ECB president Draghi officially announcing that that would be over by the end of this very month.
Yeah, that Brexit drama.
Crazy.
I kind of watch it with like, I don't know.
Yeah, everything in British politics to me is interesting because it's just the customs are different. Like just this vote of confidence was so interesting to see play out because I don't know if we have anything. I mean, I guess you could say it's similar to the impeachment process. It's obviously a little bit different. Seems a little bit easier to trigger than the impeachment process.
Yes.
It's like, oh, it's not a constitutional issue. We just don't think you're doing a good enough job.
Right. And there can be another one, but only in another year.
Right. She's good for a year at least in terms of confidence votes.
It's just wild.
Did you see that video that dude grabbed the saber or whatever it was? Or the giant mace that they have in the parliament? The Chamber of Parliament?
No.
Yeah, so there's this ceremonial mace thing, which is this giant...
Not the spray.
Like, club. No, not the spray. like ancient...
Oh, okay. Yes.
Like club-like weapon. And it's this big version of it that's a ceremonial, like jewel-encrusted one. And apparently there's this tradition where... In times of severe, I don't even know what you would say. In times of severe dysfunction, touching the mace and like grabbing it and picking it up is like an act of protest. It's been done 4 or 5 times ever in the history of British Parliament. And this guy went and grabbed the mace. There's a hilarious video of it because he just grabs it, picks it up. And then you can almost see immediately that he had no idea what he was planning on doing next with it. And everybody starts booing him. They come and rip it out of his hands, and then he gets kicked out for the day.
Wow.
It was crazy. Yeah. British Parliament, man, it's crazy.
Yeah, and our politics are seemingly weirdly calm compared to... It's not weird. It's calm in another sense.
Yes, we express ourselves a little bit differently, I think.
Yes. We're a little bit more passive aggressive.
A whole bunch more, yeah, I would say.
Where they
that.
Just kind of tell you how they feel.
I prefer it that way, too.
Yeah.
So,
anyways. So in light of all of that, we definitely had some daily headlines related to the progress of course, trade and trade talks between the U.S. and China.
Yes, we certainly did have a few bits of news here sprinkled in throughout the week. First, we heard from the Chinese that they are, in fact, making progress towards reducing tariffs on U.S.-made cars, which I think tells us a few things. Notably, it means that they're actually planning on doing that, which is obviously a good thing for domestic auto companies. But it also confirms a few of Trump's tweets from after the G20 summit. It confirms that some sort of agreement was actually made and that progress is being made towards at least pieces of that agreement, which, as we discussed, I believe, last week, there was a lot of questions on the existence of any of these handshake deals. So good to get some clarification on that point. We also heard from President Trump himself this week, who said that he would intervene in the arrest of the Huawei CFO if it meant securing a deal with China. So, Maddie, I remember when we talked about that, we both were like, this seems kind of weird that we're going to now use this person as a negotiating chip.
Right.
And then that's exactly how that played out already. There was also kind of an escalation of the legal situation because we saw an iPhone sales ban, if you want to call it that, in China, which was a favorable court ruling for Qualcomm in one of several ongoing legal battles it has with Apple. A Chinese court basically saying, ruling in favor of Qualcomm in their patent dispute, saying certain versions of the iPhone can no longer be sold here because of that. A few brief points on that. Obviously, Apple and Qualcomm have been tied up in various legal things for years now, yeah, both here and in China. You know, it's unclear whether this is a direct response to the Huawei arrest. I mean, Qualcomm is an American company after all. I just think the timing of it was interesting because it kind of does feel like a we'll see you, your legal situation with one of our biggest tech companies, mm-hmm, and match you with a legal situation for your biggest tech company. We'll see where that goes. It does feel like kind of now this is playing out in courts instead of direct tariffs. So that's some mixed news, even more mixed news, a positive on Thursday. Again, kind of like each negative has positive that outweighs it, and we're taking one step forward and one step back, and who knows. But on Thursday, we learned that China made its first major purchase of U.S. soybeans in months. So we've talked a lot about the tariffs, the tit-for-tat tariffs. We charge you for this, you charge us for that. Another thing that was used by the Chinese as kind of a technique in this trade war was they just were like, we're not buying your soybeans anymore, which really crushed American farmers. It's obviously a major row crop for a lot of people in the heartland of the United States here. So this purchase offering a bit of reprieve and at least signaling an intention to start doing business with U.S. farmers again, which is good progress. China, obviously one of the biggest agricultural importers in the world. So that's a whole lot of stuff, and I don't know if we feel any better about the situation than we did 7 days ago, after all that news, but, you know, the market is moving on any, hint of anything with this trade war. So got to make sure we're covering it.
It just becomes more convoluted by the day.
Right. By the hour, some days. It's like, it's really unbelievable. We'll do our best to stay on top of it for you guys, obviously. But, yeah, it's at some point I'm going to lose track of who's mad at who. moving on, though, we're going to talk about... We haven't talked about this company in quite a while. One of a few brands that tends to come up in our conversations a lot, and that is sports apparel maker and retailer, Under Armour.
Yeah, Under Armour. So shares of Under Armour, that's UAA, they plummeted over 10% on Wednesday as investors signaled their displeasure with the sportswear firm's long-term guidance. And the company provided this at its investor day. So Under Armour announced at the event, and this was the first investor's day in about 3 years, that it expects low single-digit growth annually in North America from 2019 through 2023. So meanwhile, the apparel company called for mid-30s growth in the Asia-Pacific region in 2019 and mid-20s growth from 2020 to 2023. So the North America segment accounted for roughly two-thirds of Under Armour's business in the first three quarters of 2018. And investors were clearly worried about what they deemed to be sluggish growth expectations here. And I would be kind of worried too. Athleisure, the trend, isn't going anywhere anytime soon. And I like to think that I stay on top of fashion trends.
Yes, you do. Can confirm.
And when I'm out and about and when I try to pay attention to what the youths are wearing, it's Adidas.
Yeah.
It's Nike.
Yeah.
It's Puma.
Mm-hmm.
It's Fila. It's Reebok.
Even is making it stronger.
It's not Under Armour.
Yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily mean
even Lululemon, who we talked about.
Absolutely.
Last weekend, Lululemon. Capturing some of this audience a little bit more.
So Under Armour hasn't been able to really, I guess, like find its little niche, so to speak. Where, they have, Steph Curry.
Right.
They have the basketball shoe. Granted, I don't know if they're great.
Yeah.
I don't play basketball.
Yeah.
They have great What's that? What's their warm stuff called?
Oh, it's like Tempur-Cool or something like
that. They have that. Yeah. You know, that serves a specific purpose.
Yeah.
But they aren't really known for a shoe or a product like Adidas is known for their Stan Smiths, for their Superstars, or Nike is known for their Air Max.
Yeah.
Of all brands to make a comeback this year, Fila, I would not expect.
Yeah.
You know, those really ugly, they're so ugly. Those ugly white sneakers, they're so ugly. But I see them on more and more people and I'm like, should I buy them? Like, well, are they ugly enough to be cute? That's always the question you have to ask during this ugly sneaker
trend. That's exactly right.
You know what I'm saying?
And it's a good point because Under Armour, when you think of what you said, like that temperature wicking material, the tighter stuff that they used to be known for 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Now everybody has that. And
you can get it at Uniqlo for half the price.
Right. So if you're going to do the bottom end there, there's other companies that have it cheaper. And if you go to the top end, if money's no issue, then you're buying that type of stuff from Lululemon or whatever. And then, like you said, just all of the trends, like Under Armour doesn't pop into your head first anymore. Fashion sneakers, not really a thing for them. The basketball thing. And 3 or 4 years ago, the conversation was, wow, Under Armour nailed the athlete endorsements. They have Steph Curry and Jordan Spieth, who are now the biggest superstars in their respective sports, and just kind of got lucky with that.
Sure.
I mean, when they signed Steph Curry to his deal, I don't think they had any expectations for Steph Curry to be a two-time NBA MVP and a part of the most dominant franchise in recent memory.
Mm-hmm.
But that buzz has kind of worn off. Jordan Spieth's buzz has kind of worn off a little bit. Still a great golfer, obviously. But, that was the story 3 or 4 years ago. It's what have you done for me lately? This year has been very good for Under Armour as they look to rebuild. But when we talk about these numbers, you know, we're talking about single-digit growth on top of the past couple of years. You look at should be easier comparable quarters. So that's, we're talking about a rebound year right now. That's because we're working with some comparable periods that are favorable for those comparisons.
Exactly.
So I think investors just wanted a little bit more from this guidance.
I mean, at this point, they need to do what their competitors are doing. Do they have a sneaker that was popular 20 years ago and they bring it back?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Not really, because they don't have... That's the thing, is they're kind of the new person on the scene.
Right,
when
they only
compare them to Nike and Adidas.
Who've been around for 30, 40, I don't know, 40 years.
Yeah, they don't have that retro thing, really. And,
no, and that's what's in right now.
And they don't have... And part of that retro thing is the fashion sneakers thing I said. And I can't think of any... Off the top of my head, I can't think of any fashion sneakers that Under Armour have, whereas Nike and Adidas are crushing that right now. So, so some serious questions there. And people, I think you said down 10% on Wednesday through Thursday. I think the past 5 days it was down something like 20%. Had some serious momentum going into that. Always have to think about the expectations and whatnot. But we're going to move from one trendy stock to several other trendy stocks.
Among nice pivot.
Among the trendiest of stocks, and that is the cannabis stocks, the marijuana stocks. We had some big news here, and we're going to move back to Washington, D.C. for a little bit of info
Don't
on
worry,
this.
Don't worry, we won't stay here for long.
members of U.S. Congress added a hemp legalization provision to the final version of the 2018 Farm Bill. And that bill became law this week on the back of what I'm going to call remarkable bipartisan support for today's day and age and the climate we've got here in D.C. sure, the Farm Bill offers billions of dollars of subsidies to American farmers, and there's probably a lot to talk about on that end, but we're not going to talk about that right now. We are going to talk about the hemp legalization provision and the cannabis, the effects it'll have on the cannabis industry. So let's talk about that. The hemp provision itself also received very strong bipartisan support, with Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon helping the Democratic push and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky signing the final bill language with a hemp pen on Monday. Yes.
Yes, he did.
This is the happiest McConnell I've seen in a very long time.
Wow. Well, I don't want to speculate why. But
McConnell called the inclusion of a hemp legalization provision a victory for farmers and consumers throughout our country, while Wyden declared it a huge win for Oregon farmers and rural communities across this country. Agreed on that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess let's talk about what hemp is first before we discuss why it's a win for American agriculture. Hemp is a species of cannabis with limited psychoactive effects, but very high value for production of papers, textiles, and other materials. Basically, anything you can use things like cotton for, really any textile material, hemp throughout centuries has been a more efficient, more affordable way to make that stuff. The reason it was illegal for so long was really the power of other forces in the agricultural lobby. And it dates back many, many, many years, many, many decades. And I think if you were to look around the world, you would say that the U.S. is pretty far behind on this. Hemp is pretty easy to grow. It's pretty cheap to grow. It grows very quickly. The materials you can make out of it can be made relatively efficiently and cheaply. So this is a win for American farmers, no doubt. But why are we talking about the cannabis materials? Why are we talking about the cannabis stocks in this conversation? Well, it's a cannabis species, as I mentioned. And while it doesn't have the THC, it doesn't have a lot of the THC, it has a very negligible amount of the THC, which is a psychoactive chemical. There is CBD in it, which is used for a variety of reasons.
It's a cannabinoid.
Yeah, cannabinoid, or however you pronounce
cannabidiol.
It. Cannabidiol. Yes.
Cannabidiol.
Yeah, you got it. We'll go with CBD. Something. Let's go with CBD.
That's much easier.
Used for a bunch of different reasons. Anti-inflammatory stuff, anti-anxiety stuff, seizures, treating seizures, tons of stuff. You can extract that from hemp. And so companies like New Age Beverages, ticker NBEV, that make CBD-based drinks, were very excited about this hemp legalization thing in the farm bill. Some of you are probably going, hey, I thought CBD was already legal. I can buy it at the gas station down the street from my house, which is the case in a lot of states. I know that's the case here in Illinois, at least in the city of Chicago. It's sold and marketed very publicly in lots of different places.
Oh, yeah.
That being said, this national legalization allows banks to, banks that operate across state lines to come in and support and do business with CBD companies. It also would decriminalize or make legal the taking of the CBD across state lines, which would have been a legal gray area without this. So a company like New Age Beverages is excited, but people were thinking, hey, is this also potentially good news for the Canadian cannabis producers as kind of a first entry into the American market? So the likes of Canopy Growth, Cronos, Tilray, making plenty of headlines this week. I don't know off the top of my head if any of those companies have any plans to move here and do hemp specifically. But certainly some stocks to watch. And I would say the New Age Beverages and anybody else that's a CBD play, certainly a stock to watch.
Yeah. What about other beverage makers?
Well, we knew
that could be like an avenue into the market.
Right. We knew Coca-Cola was thinking about the CBD
Coca-Cola,
beverages.
There's Constellation Brands.
Yes. And they're
they have a partnership
with Canopy Growth.
With Canopy Growth. But as a beverage maker, Coca-Cola was interested.
This makes that decision a whole lot easier for Coca-Cola, the legal gray area out the window now.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And you have Lagunitas, who's owned by Heineken. They have a CBD or a cannabis-based non-alcoholic beer. That's just one beer, but that doesn't mean that necessarily there won't be other beers now.
Yes, and that's kind of the big news here is that a lot of the barriers to entry is like, okay, you know, we can throw this little limited release thing together pretty cheap, but if we want to seriously do this and scale this out, you know, we might have to get some funding for this. And then there's not a bank who can come and do that with you right now. So this makes that a little bit easier, at least on the hemp and the CBD side of things. You mentioned Constellation Brands. They make Corona, among other things, mm-hmm. and have about a 33% stake in Canopy Growth, one of the Canadian producers I just mentioned. They were interested in some THC-based drinks and wanting to really get you going.
That's the stuff that gets you high, right. Everyone.
They wanted to be a full-scale just buzz company. We got to get you drunk, and we'll get you a little stoned, too. And Constellation Brands. So we'll see if they are like, we'll try out this CBD thing while we wait on the legalization here. But a lot of news there. So Farm Bill, big deal for a lot of other reasons not related to that, but also because hemp is now legal in the United States.
Yeah.
We're going to wrap things up on this week's episode with a look at another company, and not a publicly traded company, but some news from an exciting young startup that has some consequences for a lot of publicly traded companies.
Yes, Robinhood. So this is a popular free stock trading app, and they announced Thursday that it's going to start offering checkings and savings accounts with an interest rate of 3%, or roughly 30 times higher than the national average.
Yeah, it's not 0.3%. No, that is 3.0%.
It's 3. So Robinhood checking and savings will feature the fee-free zero minimum deposit structure that users have come to expect from its brokerage service. The company also said that accounts will come with MasterCard debit cards, which will be usable with no extra charges at more U.S. ATMs than the 5 largest banks combined.
That's nice. That's convenient.
That's really nice and very convenient.
Did you see the renderings of the cards that they're going to send out?
They do look really cool.
They're very cool. Yeah. My email address in to sign up for the... If you have a Robinhood account, they're constantly emailing you about new things that they're doing.
Okay.
But it's always sign up to get on the list for who gets access to it.
Oh, okay.
By 9:30 this morning, or 9:30 Thursday morning when they announced it, Chicago time, so 10:30 Eastern, I was 29,000th in line to get access to this. Not that I even know. We'll talk about some of the pros and cons in a second, but I was like, this looks cool. Those cards look really cool.
That must have been the kicker,
yeah.
Right?
I was like, I was already typing in my email address to sign up for just because the card was sick before I even saw more ATMs come than most major banks combined. I was like, oh, okay, that's a pro too.
Yeah.
But look how cool it looks.
So Robinhood is trying to do what it did to E-Trade and Charles Schwab, to the likes of Wells Fargo, Chase, and Bank of America.
Disruption.
Exactly, a disruptor. But we'll remember that the fee-charging online brokers trudge on because they offer more trading options, and the big banks retain one key advantage, brick-and-mortar branches. Robinhood will offer 24/7 live text chat support in an effort to try and mitigate this. And this
is not the same thing.
It's not the same thing. And this is probably my biggest whoa to the whole thing and this is just my personal thing about banking is that I don't have a whole lot of stuff going on at Chase. I bank with Chase. I have a checking and a savings account and one of my credit cards through Chase. Sure, it's all on the app.
Yeah. But I have the same, but through PNC.
Yeah, absolutely. So whenever I need anything, I like going into my local Chase.
Yes, me too.
And being able to just ask someone about what I think is a complicated answer or a complicated question. And it's truly not complicated at all.
They immediately know the answer.
Yes. They sit me down. They try to sign me up for a credit card. And I'm like, no.
Yes.
Typical banks, right? But they just, I feel like banking to me is just such a personal thing. And without that human connection, if something is lost there. So not to say that Robinhood one day in 5 years won't get big enough and they won't start opening brick and mortar stores.
Yeah.
And they won't have something like this. But 24/7 live text chat support just doesn't cut it for me.
It's not the same thing. No, it's not quite the same thing.
So maybe if one day that will evolve into video support so you can actually look someone.
Yeah, sure.
Like, you know, video chat support would be better.
The thing that makes me feel a whole lot better about not having a brick and mortar branch to go to is getting an interest rate of 3% on
my checking. Honestly,
that's ridiculous.
That definitely makes you like kind of almost like second guess.
I don't even know how that's possible.
Your personal banking situation, because 3% is insane.
The only thing that's comparable that I'm aware of at all is Goldman Sachs' consumer branch is called Marcus.
Yes.
They do about 2%.
I get so many freaking junk mail things from Marcus. Bill, but like, you know, open up this personal loan account through Marcus. And I'm like, oh, stop it, Goldman Sachs. But yes, Marcus.
They give you about 2.05%.
Yeah.
Which is good. It's like several multiples higher than the average that we were talking about earlier. But yeah, to just get 3% on your money for having it sit there in your savings account like you typically would is obviously, as I'm alluding to, unprecedented. So that was why I was interested in it. Obviously, the sick card was part of it as well.
Icing on the cake.
So there's a lot of things to like here. There's obviously a lot of things to like about Robinhood's stock trading app as well. There's a reason people still use E-Trade and Charles Schwab and a bunch of other different online brokers. There's going to be plenty of reasons why people continue to go into their Chase banks.
Right.
And PNCs.
This is like, I mean, this is all about your personal finance. Like, this is personal finance is very subjective.
Yeah.
It's what works best for your own situation. If this appeals to you, you signed up for the email. And if you like it, then hey, that's awesome.
If you're listening and you're thinking, I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about. I've never been inside a physical bank in my life, and I don't like people. Then
this
is
whatever.
Perfect.
This
You're
is perfect. 3%. If you don't like to talk to anyone,
perfect. Yeah,
absolutely, go for it. But like, like you said, there's so many different options for banking today.
Yeah,
that you could literally find something that suits your very specific needs.
Yes. And you can find something that suits your very specific needs on what you want your debit card to look like, because they offered 5 different options.
Yeah. And well, now we have to wait to see what Wells Fargo, Chase, Bank of America, PNC, et cetera, do to kind of
exactly.
compete
with this. And that's so the word disruption that we used earlier, this is what happens. These startups come in, they disrupt, the legacy players adjust. So we've already seen kind of a race to the bottom from the online brokers on who can cut fees the most. JP Morgan offered a version of free trading through its mobile banking app as kind of a response to Robinhood. We've generally seen prices kind of tick lower on commissions and stuff like that, and that's definitely a Robinhood initiated trend. So we'll see if Wells Fargo, Chase, and Bank of America say anything about this and maybe what the next move is through there. You know, heading into 2018 and really the second half of 2018, where we've gotten crazy in the stock market, there already was a conversation happening where very wealthy clients were saying, I need a little bit more of an interest rate for my savings account because equities markets are looking pretty easy. It's looking pretty easy to make money over here. Mm-hmm. So what's stopping me from moving more of my savings into the stock market?
Yeah.
That. The tone has probably changed a little bit recently.
Absolutely.
But, you know, that was already a conversation that was happening a few months ago. So maybe this will reignite that conversation. Who knows? I'm 29,000th in line, though. So I'll let you know.
Let us know.
I'm thinking like at 3%, move some of the savings account into there at the very least.
Or
like,
have a savings account at Robinhood and keep your checking at
exactly.
PNC.
It's the best
What's
of
stopping
both
you?
Yeah, it's the best of both worlds thing. I can whip that card out, impress people. Hey, I'm getting 3% on this bad boy. So we'll see. We will also see about the Fed meeting next week.
Sure.
Big one.
Yep.
Going to be a big one. Going to be a fun one. Results out either Wednesday or Thursday. I should know when they conclude those meetings. But we're expecting one more rate hike. We're expecting a plan for it, probably a couple, maybe 3 rate hikes next year. But we're also expecting that newly dovish sentiment that we're almost to the target rate. We're expecting some confirmation of that as well. So we'll keep our eyes on that, obviously. Until then, I guess, enjoy your weekends. Reminder, If you thought we missed anything or if you want us to cover a different story, shoot us an email at podcast@zacks.com. Also check out all of our other exclusive audio content at zacks.com/podcasts. Please remember to subscribe and leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher.
So many platforms.
Google Podcasts, all the podcast apps, basically. Thanks again for joining us. We'll see you next time.